Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
One pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Adam Azer here with a very distracted Scott White. He is filling out his bracket. He's got to get it in.
Adam made me. He made me do it. I didn't want to.
Beat the deadline here on Thursday morning, March 21st. We're recording a little later than usual. No video today. Just me and Scott. Old school audio podcasting and big show. Eloy Jimenez, Francisco Lindor, Jesus Luzardo, Alex Colome, Craig Kimbrell. We got some big news to get to. We got another baseball game to talk about. The Mariners take both games in Japan 5-4 today and a thriller. An extra innings thriller. You can assume the double play, people. Everybody knew that should have been a double play. Scott doesn't know what I'm talking about, but it should have been a double play, and the game should still be
going.
Because you just woke up, like you're exhausted.
You read it all over my face.
So anyway, tomorrow, Friday, is going to be a complete ADP review because I figure a lot of people were drafting over the weekend. We're just going to go as far as we can through ADP, good picks, bad picks, what looks good, what looks bad, whatever. So that's tomorrow. Today, I want to know who Scott has moved the most in his rankings, up or down, since the start of spring training. That doesn't necessarily mean because of its spring training performances, but any type of development, guys that are moving up or down, plus position battles, players we really, really want to draft. Let's start with the big news. Eloy Jimenez, 6 years, $43 million. So we, and Heath especially, have been saying he's been going way too late to begin with. His ADP was like in the 130s or something like that, and we think he's much better than that, but now where should Eloy Jimenez go?
Yeah, he should go higher than that, and it's kind of disappointing because he was one of the ones I had moved the most in spring training. I had moved him down. He was originally my number 19 outfielder, and I found I kept chickening out when the time came to draft him. Wasn't totally confident he was going to follow through on that mid-April timetable that would allow the White Sox to have an extra year of team control. Didn't have a great spring. So I chickened out. I moved him way down. Obviously, now all that service time nonsense is out the window, and presumably he's going to be on the opening day roster because of that. The Phillies did something like this with Scott Kingery last year. I still don't think it's a foregone conclusion because, you know, this wasn't like Acuna last year or Chris Bryant, the other famous example where they were like the best player in spring training and it was obvious they should be up. Eloy Jimenez was bad, but it, you know, tiny sample. It doesn't, the White Sox, there's a good chance they recognize it doesn't really mean anything and there's nothing more to gain by sending him to AAA and he's up. So I'm now approaching him as if he is their opening day left fielder. I haven't moved him all the way up to where I have him before because by now I am so firmly entrenched on getting Yasiel Puig and David Dahl. I don't want to move him ahead of them, but he is, I think, 25th in my outfield rankings, Jimenez is, which puts him in the top 80 in roto leagues, okay. Five outfielder roto leagues, and it puts him in the top 100 in points.
Would you take Lorenzo Cain or Eloy Jimenez?
I have him behind Kane, so I'd take Kane.
Would you take Michael Conforto or Eloy Jimenez?
I think I have him ahead of Conforto, I think. Jimenez.
David Dahl or Conforto or Jimenez?
Well, if you were listening to what I was saying.
Oh, I wasn't.
Can't bring myself to take him ahead of Dahl, so okay. Dahl's ahead.
Okay, so Eloy, give me a projected stat line for Eloy.
Okay, so let me try and think here without getting too over my skis. Is that the expression?
Well, you can put the word ish at the end of every stat
ish?
You give.
Yeah, like, ish. That's Nando's thing to do.
280 ish.
Yeah.
Whatever.
All right, so kind of tempering expectations a bit, a modest projection for Eloy Jimenez, I'm going to say 270 batting average, 29 homers, something like 80 RBI, 75 runs scored.
Okay. And very few steals. No, like, forget steals.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't expect many steals. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if the low strikeout rate carries over to the majors, because that could make him, you know, I may have understated the batting average there. He's really good. He should be, obviously, if I have my 25th outfielder, I'm drafting him as a fantasy starter, basically format of any depth right out of the gate.
Okay, Scott, Francisco Lindor has not been ruled out for opening day, so he's certainly ahead of his timetable. And when would you feel comfortable taking Francisco Lindor, and have you changed your mind about him running this year, which you don't think he's going to steal that many bases?
Now, you know how big a fan I am of Dr. Mike Tanner.
Oh, yeah. And
he totally nailed the Daniel Murphy timetable at this time a year ago when the Nationals were being so vague and making it sound like, yeah, it won't be long. And it ended up being like half the season. And Dr. Mike Tanner was all over that. He is right on track, possibly opening day. And he's still thinking 15 to 20 steals for him. I still have my concerns, but I want to throw Dr. Mike Tanner's opinion out there since I think so highly of it. I'll take him in the top 15, Lindor, but not in the first round.
Really? Okay. Still interesting. So like you're going to take Yelich over him and Harper. What about like the first baseman, Freeman and Goldschmidt, or Goldschmidt and Freeman?
I might, when push comes to shove, take Goldschmidt over him just because I feel like it's a better chance of building a stout roster all the way through, because first base is a harder position to fill in the rounds that follow than shortstop is. But I think just from the perspective who's going to have a better season, I would take Lindor ahead.
All right, Scott, let's go to Jesus Luzardo. He's going to be shut down for 4 to 6 weeks with a strained rotator cuff. This is A's pitching prospect, Jesus Luzardo, who was a spring riser for sure. And when should he be drafted, Jesus Luzardo?
If you're in a league that drafts Forrest Whitley, where you expect him to go, then Luzardo should still be drafted. I'm not expecting to see him until June. Because by the phrasing of it, he'll be shut down 4 to 6 weeks. I assume that means no throwing whatsoever, which means he'll have to build up again. But, you know, you're drafting Whitley under the same set of criteria. Elite prospect, probably not up until the summer. Can't stash him in a DL spot. I don't think you'll be able to stash Luzardo on a DL spot because he's not on the 40-man roster. So I don't think he'll wind up on the DL. I could be wrong about
Bummer.
That, but I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a bench spot you're talking about. So he's not getting drafted everywhere anymore, but he's still draftable, I think, in the average mixed league.
That's Jesus Luzardo. Alex Colomé appears to be the favorite to open the season as the White Sox closer, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. Do you anticipate Colomé will hold on to that?
I do. I think he's their best reliever. But, you know, Kelvin Herrera has some influence there, and it's hardly a foregone conclusion.
And Corey Knebel, okay, this is big. Corey Knebel is not throwing, and they're talking to Craig Kimbrell. So Knebel says he's not hurt. I don't know, they're just giving him a little bit of rest. But, yeah, I mean, there's a chance that Craig Kimbrell is going to be the Brewers' closer. So what do we do right now?
I'm avoiding Knebel for the time being. I mean, if he falls to like the Matt Barnes, Archie Bradley range, okay, I'll take a chance on him. He still has top five potential as a reliever. But there's too much smoke here right now. Too much smoke. Got to wait till the smoke clears. As a Braves fan, I'm disappointed to hear this news because I have been holding out hope. They go after Kimbrel eventually. They have even more desperate need. Like Knebel, okay, maybe he's hurt. Jeffers definitely is, but the Braves right now, AJ Minter beginning on the DL, Darren O'Day beginning on the DL. And by the way, they're not totally confident Arodys Vizcaíno can pitch back-to-back days because of his bad shoulder. So what are they going to do at the back of their bullpen? Seems like they should bring in Kimbrel.
So would you take Corey Knebel or Arodys Vizcaíno?
I think I would still take Knebel, but I am not the biggest believer in Vizcaíno.
Would you take Colomé or Vizcaíno?
Colomé would be third of that group still.
How about Hunter Strickland? Two saves in two games. Or Colomé?
Yeah, here's the thing about Strickland and Colomé. I feel like they are among the worst relievers who have a closer role, but they seem to have a pretty firm grip on that closer role.
What's so bad about these guys? I mean, Strickland didn't have a great year last year. He finished very poorly.
Yeah, he was bad after he broke his hand. He was actually pretty good before.
Yeah, like I know he doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he's been a very good, consistent, you know, not great, but good reliever. I know last year's numbers were a little ugly. I don't know. I think he's going to surprise people. And unfortunately, it's too late now because two saves in two games is going to move him up draft boards, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to even get a chance as a closer if you're just a bad reliever. But by closer standards, they don't exactly measure up. Colomé did, what was it, 2 years ago?
Yeah,
with the Rays. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the outlier for him to this point. I think, like, they seem like the kind of relievers I would be happy to settle for as my second option in a head-to-head points leagues where you only need two, and I'm just like, whatever, whoever's still there in the last round. Because you know they'll get saves, and in that format, you don't necessarily need great ratios. Okay. Otherwise, I think of them as number three closers.
For Colomé, it was 2016. He was awesome. 191 ERA, 102 whip, 71 strikeouts, and 56 and two-thirds. 2017 was fine. 2018 was terrible with Tampa Bay, and then very good with Seattle. And we'll see what 2019 has in store for Alex Colomé. And Ichiro is retiring. First ballot Hall of Famer, played his last game today in a win for the Seattle Mariners. So good for him. All right, Scott, let's talk about players we really, really want to draft. So, yeah, this could be, I know, Mondesi for you, but other than Mondesi, players that you really want to draft. You want them on your squads. What you got?
Well, I think the second player who I've been most enthusiastic about drafting, and it has to do with where he's going, is Jesse Winker. I'd be lying if I said the bad spring didn't concern me at all. It does, especially since they have a glut of outfielders there. How concerned are they about finding playing time for Matt Kemp? Does Philip Ervin, who had an awesome spring, factor into the mix at all? These are big questions. But Winker, I think, is potentially their best outfielder over everybody, including Puig. And I think the price tag is low enough, you know, usually getting him in like the 14 round range in a 12 team league. It's low enough that if he busts, it's not the end of the world. And I don't really think he's going to bust. I mean, I think there's a good chance he's hanging with Joey Votto in OPS all season. So Jesse Winker's one.
Okay.
I've been drafting a lot of Pete Alonso. I feel like he's not getting hyped enough. A bat on the impact maybe of like Eloy Jimenez, and he could be up from opening day too. If not, it won't be long.
I know. I'm just getting worried that Dominic Smith is also going to be on the opening day roster. Yeah, I was just reading the kind of a Mets roster projection yesterday in the New York Post, and they both might be there, or maybe Smith starts and Alonso they keep down for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be for long. Okay. There's been a lot of hype about Dominic Smith because he looked like he was just a lost cause, and he's had a pretty good spring.
He had some sleep
changes,
apnea.
Whatever.
He has
three
apnea.
Extra base hits.
Right. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he had sleep apnea, and he's now, I think, using a CPAP machine, and that will hopefully lead to better things for Dominic Smith. But Alonso appears to be
better. A high strikeout rate, three extra base hits this spring. It hasn't been as impressive as just looking at the batting average would lead you to believe it is. And when the time comes where the Mets want to pull the cord on Alonso, I don't think Smith's standing in his way.
Okay, so Winker, Pete Alonso, who else?
I'm starting to get pretty excited about Nick Senzel, who may or may not make the opening day roster, but it would be just a service time thing, like all of these other prospects. It's clear he's who they want in center field, the Reds. And, I mentioned Yasiel Puig, David Dahl. They're kind of more mid-round types, but I think they have early round upside, so I like targeting them a lot. Germán Márquez, Chris Archer, basically all of those pitchers who've shown us ace potential in the past, but you don't have to pay an ace price tag for. I gravitate toward all of those guys on draft day. So that includes those two. It includes Yu Darvish.
Yep, that is one of mine.
Yep. I think even, to an extent, even Cole Hamels, though, he's a step behind those others.
Yeah, so Darvish, I read an article in The Athletic last night that sort of calmed my fears about his blister. I think he should be fine. So I will continue to make him the player I love, Yu Darvish, forever in my heart. Mm-hmm. I really want James Paxton. I think it's just a matter of staying healthy. I think he has, I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young, but I think he could be like a top three finisher and a top five. He was 10th best in walk to strikeout ratio last year, and that is an elite list. I think he just had some bad home run luck. I'm getting more excited about Jameson Taillon as an awesome number three or a really good number two if you load up on hitters. I talked about that yesterday, so I won't get more into that. Yu Darvish, yes. Brad Peacock, I also talked about that yesterday. Really excited about him. And then that outfield group of Dahl, Pollock, Eloy Jimenez, Michael Conforto. I think Aaron Hicks is going to go way too late. I want one or two of those guys. This one is not necessarily justified by spring or, well, I haven't really checked spring, but by, justified by last year's performance. But I think of Trevor Story and how excited we were about him after his rookie year, and how unexcited we were about him after his sophomore year. And that's just how I feel and how I felt since the end of 2018 about Rafael Devers. So I would like to get him. Seems like everybody feels that way about Devers, but he still goes late enough, 140th overall, right around there. Just, you know, I'd like him on a couple of my rosters if possible. Rafael Devers, Adam Eaton. Could be great value, especially with the Michael Taylor injury. You know I like me some Tyler Skaggs. Scott, I haven't said Carlos Santana's name. We haven't really talked about him. He's fine in Roto. I currently have him as my utility in our Roto League, our pretty deep 360-man Roto League. That's how many players are rostered. Not per team. But Santana in points leagues, if you, like, first base is shallow, but if you wait and wait, and Carlos Santana, he was the number five first baseman in points leagues last year, and he had a terrible season, and I just don't think he's that bad. So points leagues, good value on Santana, and these San Diego starting pitchers are starting to pique my interest quite a bit, especially now that Lizardo's out of the question, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you went a little lower in there, because those, I'm the same way. The top three in San Diego, at least in terms of ability, I think Chris Paddock, Matt Strom, who had another good start yesterday and was lead pitcher eligible, and Joey Lucchesi. Those are some of my favorite late round targets at starting pitcher right now.
And they might not be such a bad team, so they might not kill you in win loss record. You know, they could be respectable this year if those guys are good. I guess they kind of go hand in hand. All right. So those are some players that we are really looking to draft, and I hope that helps you out here. You know, I'm not afraid to reach for them. There's one more that I might be taking with my next pick in an untimed draft. I'm on deck. Oh, I'm on the clock.
I'm going to throw another name at you that I'm drafting late. Cause you know, San Diego, we talked about them suddenly looking like they have a bunch of pitching options. I think Miami's the same way. Trevor Richards is the main one I'm looking at because his changeup is elite. We talk all the time about how Luis Castillo has this changeup with like a 25% swinging strike rate. Trevor Richards was right there last year. He just didn't have a well-rounded arsenal. It was mostly just the changeup. He unveiled a curveball over his last two starts last year, two awesome starts to end the year. He stuck with it this spring, and he has been flirting with no hitters, it seems like, every time out there. So very excited about Trevor Richards. To a lesser extent, Caleb Smith, who has like an elite fastball with an elite spin rate and has been getting tons of strikeouts. You know, for a while last year, we were excited about him, and then he had a season-ending shoulder injury. He might be a very last round kind of pick for me, Caleb Smith. But both of those pitchers, I think, are pretty exciting.
So also in The Athletic, I saw the Marlins writer project their rotation. and he has Caleb Smith in the bullpen with, but with opportunities to make starts, basically, with Jose Ureña, Dan Straley, Sandy Alcantara, Trevor Richards, and Pablo Lopez in the rotation. But he said about Lopez, quote, expect the Marlins to monitor his overall innings this season, as Lopez is coming off a shoulder strain that forced him to be shut down last September. That makes him a likely candidate to flip-flop from rotation to bullpen if they keep six or seven starters.
Yeah, I think of the three who've really impressed the most this spring are Richards, Caleb Smith, and Pablo Lopez. And you know, if they give preferential treatment to just some of the presumptive favorites going in, like Wei-Yin Chen and Sandy Alcantara, then, you know, I think the only one for sure of those ones we really like are Richards. He's the only one who's locked in on the job. But it just depends how they decide to play it, because Lopez, Smith, and Richards have earned it while those other guys haven't. And a lot of those other guys, I mean, Wei-Yin Chen, what are they holding out hope for there anymore?
Oh, Wei-Yin Chen, who, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I don't know. I'm going to look it up right now. I think his home ERA last year may have been under two. It was stunning. He was so good at home. So we will talk more about players that we are moving up, that Scott has moved up throughout spring training or moved down, update you on some position battles. Dakota Hudson is looking like he will be the St. Louis number five starting pitcher. I want to talk about Jordan Hicks and his major control problems this spring. But first, I want to tell you about the Podcast League. Hey, Adam, Podcast League draft is on Monday. When are you going to announce who's in the league? Tomorrow. Tomorrow I will let you know if you are in the Podcast League. So far, I've got the three songs you heard, and I'm going to leave a spot open for whoever is one of the people leading after this weekend in the NCAA tournament bracket, which will probably be like a 200-way tie, unfortunately. I feel like previously we did the draft after the second weekend of the tournament. Is that possible? I don't know. But I'll leave one spot open for that, and that will leave four more spots that I'll be choosing tonight, and I will let you know tomorrow. Meanwhile, if you want to watch all of your March Madness games, NCAA March Madness Live is where you can get direct streaming access to live coverage of every game. NCAA March Madness Live is available across 17 streaming platforms. One of the coolest features available is Fast Break, which now covers the entire first weekend. So when multiple games are being played, Fast Break has live whip-around coverage, the option to switch from game to game for live look-ins, quick turnaround highlights, got real-time analysis, you got social reaction and commentary for all games, and it's all in one place. So look, we've been getting you ready for this stretch all year long. You really don't want to miss a second of the action. Download NCAA March Madness Live now on your streaming device. Let's talk about Scott's crappy headline from his spring training story. Do you know what it is? Can you think? Oh man, this was a crappy headline.
Well, they could all be deemed crappy. So I don't know which direction you're going with this.
I usually like it.
Probably straddles the line between awesome and crappy.
This was terrible.
Okay.
No lowballing Lau. Like, his name is Lau.
Right.
You can't say lowballing.
Well, it you know, I can.
Crappy headline.
Okay.
But Brandon Lau did get a major league. He got a contract. It was like $24 million.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
It is. And actually, this is probably of my sleepers. Of the sleepers I feel best about, this might be the one getting the least attention from the industry at large. His ADP on Fantasy Pros, I think, is so low that it doesn't even show up. He doesn't show up on the ADP page, Brandon Lau. And
he's at 371.
Okay. So it's must have changed. He must be picking up some traction lately here. But in any case, that's really low. That's outside of the standard mixed league range. Coming in, it didn't look like he had a job, but they were trying him at first base. At spring training, obviously, he's already played outfield and second base in the major leagues. Like, it seemed to me that just between those three positions, considering they have so many moving parts everywhere at the Rays, that it wouldn't be hard to find regular at-bats for him between those three spots. And he's been their best hitter this spring. His minor league track record, particularly last year, very impressive. Guy who gets on base a lot, power to all fields. I don't know why he's not more hyped as a prospect, frankly, because he looks like just a terrific hitter. And I think this contract, first of all, it shows they're committed to having him on the roster. And second of all, it shows they expect him to be a big contributor. I mean, you don't hand out a 6-year deal to a guy you think of as just, you know, just some extra utility bat off your bench. I think he's going to play a lot. I think he's going to exceed 20 homers this year. I don't know by how much, but that alone should pique your interest, particularly in like a standard roto lineup with the extra outfield spots, the extra middle infield spot.
This is Brandon Lau we're talking about for the Tampa Bay Rays. And what is his eligibility? Is it just second base?
For now.
Okay.
But I expect him to pick up outfield and first base.
Okay.
I drafted him in both my 15-team roto leagues as a bench player. But nice. I expect he's going to see a lot of time in my lineup in both. In my AL only roto league, I have him there. I don't think I think it's time to talk about him in like 12-team roto leagues though.
Yeah, that's great. All right, Brandon Lau, good stuff. That Scott's been talking about him since basically the end of last season. He had a great September. He had like an 850-ish OPS in September, and there you go. You can get him for free. Let's talk about baseball. Seattle 9, because we haven't been doing that all show. Seattle 9, Oakland 7 on Wednesday morning. And Seattle 5, Oakland 4 on Thursday morning. And we already talked about the Wednesday developments on yesterday's show. Heath and I talked about that. In case you missed it, Domingo Santana hit a grand slam. Today he doubled and drove in a run. He is 2-for-10. The grand slam was somewhat cheap. This was a big-time hitter's ballpark. D. Gordon, I think, has 3 hits and 1 steal. Looks good. Batted leadoff in both games. Heath did point out Malik Smith did not play, but what are they going to just send D. Gordon to the 9 hole when Malik Smith gets back? That would sort of surprise me.
Well, what else would they do?
Put Malik Smith in the 9 hole. Like, D. Gordon is better than Malik Smith.
We'll see. Yeah. I'm not sure I agree with you on that.
It makes a difference, but D. Gordon looks good and healthy. And where he hits in the order would really make a difference. Okay, so 2 things. Let's get one out of the way here. Tim Beckham is off to a great start. He went 3-for-3 on Wednesday with a home run. And today he went 2-for-4 with a double. Do you care at all about Tim Beckham? He's 10% owned. By the way, Tim Beckham is playing for Seattle right now.
Not to the extent that he needs to be more than 10% owned. He does, you know, maybe at some point J.P. Crawford replaces him, but he does look like the Mariners starting shortstop for the time being. He has some pop, but he has terrible plate discipline and isn't going to hit for, even like a respectable batting average, despite this hot start.
Okay. Now the other thing is Kikuchi. So I watched most of it. I didn't see the first inning, but yeah, like it was encouraging until it wasn't encouraging at all. He was great through 4 innings, came out in the 5th inning, ran into some trouble, left with a couple men on base, and he had given up a run. Another run scored, but it was unearned. Final line for Yusei Kikuchi, he was only 76% owned, which means probably not owned in 10-team leagues. 4 2/3, 4 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. He was on a pitch count, and he seemed to run out of gas. And I guess first start of the year, it's not that surprising. But
yeah,
the first 4 innings
looked
great.
To 90.
Yeah, yeah. But he labored in that last inning. But the first 4 innings were great for Kikuchi. I'm glad I got a chance to see him. I don't really have any major takeaways. I don't want to taint people with my thoughts, my scouting report on him, because I don't feel comfortable with it. But what do you think about Yusei Kikuchi? Where do you think he should be going?
I think he should be going about, let me pull up my rankings here so I don't unknowingly contradict them. Yeah, I have him 38th. I was going to say top 40. I think probably that ownership percentage has to do with the fact that a lot of leagues just haven't drafted yet. And yeah. So obviously he's not on the rosters. He's not on any roster in a league that hasn't drafted yet. So I suspect he'll be close to 90% owned when all's said and done. What I like about Kikuchi, this start notwithstanding, I mean, it is a mid-March start, so I don't think it's fair to expect these guys to have be quite totally stretched out yet. But what I like about Kikuchi is that I think he's going to give you a frontline pitcher volume on a start-by-start basis. Yeah, they may have to pull back at some point. You know, he may serve a DL stint at some point. He doesn't have the greatest track record health-wise.
Yes, that was pointed out on the broadcast. Kikuchi has a pretty extensive history of arm injuries.
But I think when he does pitch, he'll be a pretty consistent source of six-inning outings, which is pretty valuable in today's landscape. Mm-hmm. Could be right around a strikeout per inning. I don't think he's going to hurt himself with walks. I think he's going to be very solid. I think.
Me too.
I think a good comparison. What would be a good comparison? Let's see. I'm struggling to find a good comparison. Like maybe kind of Jose Quintana like, but prior to last year's version of Jose Quintana. Maybe like a Kyle Hendricks, but with more strikeouts.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think he's. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, top 40 pitcher. I think that's a good range. Also, Domingo Santana stole a base today, so he is off to a pretty good start. Despite he's 2-for-10, whatever. But 53% owned right now, Domingo Santana, and Heath would be very excited about that. Blake Treinen, by the way, two scoreless innings with four strikeouts. All right, news and notes. Let's see what else we have. We have news and notes. We have Fab Talk. We have rankings adjustments, position battles, and your emails. I hope you can all listen to the rest of the show because we have a lot of important stuff to get to. We'll get to the news and notes right after this quick break.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Scott, Luis Severino felt no pain while throwing yesterday. And, okay, is he a top 100 pick for you, Luis Severino?
I want to say he is. Again, I'd have to pull up my rankings to be sure, but I know I'm not downgrading him as much as some people are.
Okay. Yeah, I actually read, I think in Joel Sherman's column, that he has a chance to come back in April, which seems remote. But what I took from that was that he's not going to miss the entire first half or anything like that. You know,
well, what you have to remember, and this is the point every time I bring up Herman Marquez and Chris Archer and that whole group of pitchers I like beyond the early round range, is that you're not the odds of you finding an ace. Yeah, it's like a needle in a haystack now, because these guys aren't just even the talented pitchers. You can't just presume that kind of workload. So somebody who you already know is an ace, even if it's a wait for him, it's just such a rare commodity that like it's kind of a nice luxury to know Luis Severino is going to be out there later than you ever expected him to be. He's somebody who.
Would you take Chris Archer or Luis Severino?
I would take Severino.
Okay.
I have Severino just behind Jack Flaherty.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of the range I'm thinking. 65th overall in points leagues. Sure, it's lower in Roto, but yeah, I would assume top 100 still in that format.
So I just need to speed us up here, as it's my fault. We're just not getting to some of the things we need to talk about. But you are not really interested in Luis Sessa, and you mentioned in your story you haven't seen anything to explain why Sessa is having such a great, and he is having a great spring, and he will almost certainly be in the Yankees rotation for a little while. He has added a two-seamer, and that has been an effective pitch for him. So I just wanted to throw that out there. He's in better shape. He's got more confidence. But the two-seamer, I think, is also very important. And how about this? The Yankees' schedule in April is so easy. their first nine games are against Baltimore and Detroit. Then they go three at Houston, but then the White Sox, then two against Boston, then four games against Kansas City, four games at the Angels, at San Francisco, at Arizona. So, yeah, look, standard mixed league, no, but I think that probably Cessa and Herman are going to have some good matchups early in the year. They might be someone that were someone's people that we're talking about streaming.
Yeah, I never like to put a ceiling on anybody, particularly a pitcher who throws 97, right? Like Cessa does.
He does.
So I'm keeping an open mind, but among pitchers who've raised eyebrows this spring, he ranks pretty low on my list because there's basically nothing to get excited about in either the major or minor league track record.
Right.
And it's a pretty extensive track record at this point.
Okay.
But we'll see. We'll see. I'm much more excited about Domingo Herman. He's somebody I'm targeting late in every draft. Cessa, I think of him more as if he impresses his first two outings of the regular season, then maybe we talk about picking him up.
Clayton Kershaw could be back in mid to late April, so we'll take him over Severino. Luis Castillo is going to be Cincinnati's opening day starter, and he's not having a good spring. But you are not concerned about Luis Castillo's bad spring, right?
No, I'm not. I mean, you know there's some risks going in. It's not a sure thing, but I don't think a bad spring takes away from the upside I see there.
I like that they're making him the opening day starter. They've got some other options there. I mean, they could go with like a Tanner Roark or something like that. I don't know if Sonny Gray going to be ready for opening day?
I think he is.
Yeah, they could.
Alex Wood isn't.
Alex Wood, no, but they've got some options there, so I like the confidence there that they have in Castillo. Joey Gallo is still dealing with a groin issue, but he could be ready for opening day. Rhys Hoskins has left shoulder soreness. They are downplaying it, say he will be ready for opening day. All right, Andrew McCutchen's going to bat leadoff for Philadelphia. Now, I really don't think he's that good anymore, but I do think he is good in points leagues. I think Heath and Chris would probably be higher on him in Roto than I would. But, you know, I think he's a fading player. But this is a big deal to me that McCutchen, I thought he was going to bat first or second. So I guess not a huge deal. But I love it. I think in points leagues, this guy could be your third outfielder and could honestly be like, it's kind of how I feel about Aaron Hicks. I mean, these guys could be top 15 outfielders in points.
Yeah, I mean, he is a fading player, McCutchen, but one thing he still does very well is gets on base, and now he's getting on base at the top of the lineup ahead of players like Bryce Harper, Rhys Hoskins, JT Realmuto. He's going to score a ton of runs if he stays healthy, and on the road last year, he hit 13 of his 20 home runs, you know, obviously spent most of last year in San Francisco. He had 14 steals on the season. I mean, going to a park like San Francisco, and even where he was before in Pittsburgh, really, really tough place for right-handed hitters. San Francisco obviously is worse for left-handers, but it's just bad for everybody. Now he's going to Philadelphia, a great hitter. Like, I think if only because of the change in environment, it'll appear to be a season where he... you know, he gets some of that skill back. I don't know if he'll really be getting skill back, but it'll appear that way in the numbers because I think the venue change is that significant.
And looks
so
like,
I like him.
Yeah.
I would be fine with him as my number two outfielder. I have him ranked more like a number three, but you know I don't invest a lot in outfield, and I'd be cool with him as my number two.
In both points and Roto or only in points leagues?
In both, because he's not a zero for steals, and you just have a lot more outfield spots to fill in Roto. I do think the skill set favors points leagues, but the other circumstances I think makes it pretty even in terms of how I prioritize McCutchen.
And Segura is projected about second, which is also nice. Aaron Hicks says he's pain-free. He's eligible to come off the DL on April 4th. Dellin Betances is going to start the season on the IL. Oh, I said DL for Hicks and IL for Betances. I got to get out of that habit. With a shoulder impingement, which is just inflammation, but it's a little worrisome. I mentioned it before they put him on the IL or said they were going to put him on the IL. Betances not throwing hard at all, having a rough spring. Pedro Strop may not be ready for opening day, which kind of screws up one of my strategies of waiting and waiting and waiting and taking Strop and then either adding Morrow after in a shallow league or also taking Morrow and then putting him on the DL. depending on league depth. But Strope may not be ready for opening day. So then it's Carl Edwards Jr., Steve Cishek, Brandon Kinstler, Brian Dunsing as possible options there. Strope should be back pretty early in the season.
And yeah. But, I mean, he's not exactly proven in the role. It's possible somebody like Steve Cishek could end up filling, doing what I presume Strope might be able to do, which is just not giving up the job once he's in it. I still think Strope's the top guy to draft in that bullpen, but it's kind of a mess right now.
Scott, you want to talk about rankings adjustments, the biggest risers and fallers for you over the last month or so?
Sure, we can talk about that. I haven't been keeping a list, so I wish I could be a little more organized about this, but we already talked about the Padres pitchers, Strom, Paddock, and Lucchesi. They've all moved up a lot. The Marlins pitchers, particularly Trevor Richards and Caleb Smith. Ryan McMahon is somebody we've talked about a lot, but not necessarily in this show. I now tier him among first basemen. That's the position where he's eligible. Obviously going to be second base soon, but I now tier him with like Luke Voit and Pete Alonso, Ryan McMahon. So somebody I'm very excited about drafting, just like I am those two. Austin Hayes, I understand he's beginning the year in the minors, but I think he was one of the biggest risers this spring, kind of reminded everybody of his potential, and I think we'll see him before the end of April. Definitely worth drafting in five outfielder leagues. Kyle Wright, who was kind of lost in the Braves' glut of pitching prospects and then kind of went out to the front of the pack this spring to the point that he's probably in the starting five to begin the year. And who knows after that? I mean, Sean Newcomb has had a terrible time throwing strikes this spring. Tuki Toussaint, no guarantees he sticks. So maybe Wright is the one who does. He's relief pitcher eligible.
I'll throw a name out at you.
Sure.
I think you wrote about him recently. Where's Nick Pivetta for you now? Has he moved up for you?
I feel like I have him ranked pretty optimistically, and he's in my breakouts column. I haven't drafted him anywhere yet because it just seems like he's such a trendy breakout pick that there's somebody in every league who's just crazy enthusiastic for him. But I like Nick Pivetta. I haven't moved him up. I have moved up Shane Bieber into the Nick Pivetta range. Also kind of a trendy breakout pick. I wasn't totally on board with it, but now I am.
And what range are we talking? Like, when would you be comfortable taking Pivetta and Bieber?
So pulling up my rankings here, it's loading. Nick Pivetta, I have 41st. Bieber, I have 40th. So right there behind Kikuchi, who we were talking about 38th before. I also have them behind John Gray, who I also consider breakout, but I think he's a little more proven in terms of how deep he pitches into games. And more strikeout potential. You know what? Pivetta's strikeout potential is probably similar. But yeah, Shane Bieber added a changeup this spring, and it might be a difference maker for him. It's looking really good.
Cool. All right. Anything else, Scott? Anything else? You guys who have dropped in your rankings?
Well, let me think here. Loy Jimenez had.
Did Luke Voit drop in your rankings? I know that was a sleeper for you, but it's not clear what's going to happen at first base there. They're both going to make the team out of spring training until Hicks comes back, it seems.
Yeah.
I am loving my Greg Bird at 360th overall pick in our Roto League. I'm loving it.
Here's what I don't understand. I guess I kind of understand, but I don't think it's a good enough reason. Why can't they start both?
I think you're playing with fire if you have Stanton in the field every day.
He is not considered a bad defender.
He's always injured. Last year he didn't because he DH'd a good amount. I'm talking about Stanton.
Yeah, maybe. The reason I've seen is that it makes it hard if you need to replace an outfielder mid-game.
True.
Okay, fine. But if they believe in Bird as much as they claim, they believe in Voit as much as they claim, That would seem like an easy solution. Just DH Void, Bird at first base, Stanton and Judge both in the outfield. When Aaron Hicks comes back, he takes over in center. You're only losing Brett Gardner that way. And obviously he's coming off the bench as an outfielder, so you have an outfield replacement there.
There's no way they're just going to bench Brett Gardner.
Why?
He's very good defensively, and he's just like they're just not going to bench Brett Gardner. I mean, he's not going to play every day, but...
Well, I think he would be on the bench every day necessarily in this scenario either. He would give guys a rest here and there.
Sure.
If Bird and Voit continue to hit into the regular season like they had this spring, I think it's possible we see this become the plan. I mean, entering spring training, Gardner was supposedly fighting to fend off Clint Frazier, so they at least seem open to the idea that he's not an everyday player for them anymore. Frazier didn't perform at all this spring, so that didn't come to pass. But
I anticipate Gardner will sit against lefties.
Yeah.
And then you could DH both of those guys, and then you could get Stanton in left field or right field, Judge in left, I guess. I just was curious if you are less enthused about taking Luke Voit. I think you have to be a little.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to let somebody else take Voit, and then I take Pete Alonso.
Right.
Okay. But I'm still excited to take Voit, too, if that makes sense. Like
it does.
I took him in our points league the other day.
Yeah.
I'm finding I'm not always the one taking him anymore like I was, you know, when we were drafting in January or whatever.
I think you look at Luke Voit, and I drafted him in a shallow league at a point where it was like, okay, if the guy I draft here is completely useless and I have to drop him in week one, is it really going to affect my team? No. He was my utility. I've been playing in 12-team points leagues for like 10 years, and I know I can find somebody that I like for my utility on the waiver wire. So that's
and meanwhile, I think the upside for Voit is basically the same as it is for Jose Abreu, like 290, 30-plus homers. So, yeah, that's exactly the way you use a pick like that. You know there's going to be a lot of turnover on the back end of your roster. There should be if you're as active as you need to be on the waiver wire. It's more because there are other options available in that same range who I think are just exciting in terms of upside, like a Pete Alonso, than it is that I've been scared away from Luke Voit.
Okay, I'm so concerned on this show that we're not giving our listeners all the information, all the strategies they need, but I think I just have to like relax and we've done a good job, you know. I think we've done a thorough job. We've talked about draft strategies, sleepers, breakouts, busts, all that stuff. And I hope you're all prepared. Tomorrow when we do the ADP review, I think we'll give us a nice opportunity to talk about some players that we don't usually talk about. And kind of look at where hitters and pitchers are being drafted and when you need to be reaching at different positions and whatnot. But I think if you've been listening for the last month since we started the position previews, you should be in good shape. We got to update you on position battles. So, yeah, do you have any interest in Dakota Hudson, who appears to be the favorite to be St. Louis's number five starter?
Again, I don't like to set upside on pitchers who throw hard. In his case, a prospect pedigree. But I think it's more for deeper leagues now. He wasn't a big bat misser in the minors. Seems more like a ground ball specialist. We'll see if that stuff plays up.
I don't know what else there is to discuss that we haven't discussed. We talked about the White Sox closers. We talked about the New York Yankees and Mets first baseman. I guess we could bring up the Dodgers rotation because you wrote about Walker Buehler and how he might not be an obvious start at the beginning of the year because they're still building up his innings. He might not even go like five innings, I think you said you were worried about. I don't remember exactly the number you said. But Walker Buehler, yeah, could be a little disappointing for owners early in the year.
Yeah. Right, they hadn't built him up. They're going to piggyback Julio Urias with him, it sounds like. Urias is probably going to be on the opening day roster as a reliever, but more like a piggyback situation where they're each pitching four innings, which I think is, I take as an encouraging development for Urias, but given the price tag you're paying for Buehler, like he's an ace, I mean, it's not a great scenario for an ace. Maybe by his third, fourth start, he'll be pitching, you know, six, seven innings and it won't be an issue. But it's just a reminder that he's not as safe as the others in that group.
Listen, Scott, what needs to happen is Walker Buehler, when he's taken out of the game, he needs to literally go to the bullpen and give Arias a piggyback ride out to the mound. It would be terrific theater, and it would be great for baseball. These are the types of outside-the-box thoughts that we need in baseball. It's we got to attract the younger generation. They love the kids love piggyback rides, so just consider it. Jordan, yeah, I think so. Have you given your kids a piggyback ride yet?
I haven't.
Oh, I'm Scott, not... do it today and let us know.
Yeah, I'm not. See, my first son isn't the most coordinated. My second son's looking better. He looks like he might be the athlete of the two. But the first of them, I'm not totally confident he would hold on like he needs to.
He can hold on. You hold his legs.
You'd be surprised. Things like that don't come naturally to him.
That just means you have to hunch more. So he's basically just like laying flat.
Yeah.
You know, take the pressure off of him.
Have you given yours a piggyback ride? He's not even a year old.
No, he's 8 months. Yeah. Not yet. I'm practicing, though, you know. So, Jordan Hicks, I think, you know, we've expressed the excitement that Hicks is going to be the closer. He's got 11 strikeouts in 5 innings. He also has 7 walks in 5 innings. And that is something that could really hurt him. Not winning the job necessarily, but keeping the job. So, what do you think about Jordan Hicks right now?
Yeah, I was pretty hot on him during kind of the middle stages of spring training. And he's not a sure thing. I mean, the hope is that his slider, which looks pretty good, helps his fastball play up and he becomes a big swing and miss pitcher. So already strikeouts are a question mark. And then you throw control in there too. And I mean, you have to be really good at least one of those things, I think, to make it as a closer. And he's a question for both. I mean, maybe Carlos Martinez comes back and he becomes the closer. Maybe Alex Reyes becomes the closer. Of course, Andrew Miller's there. There are options.
John Brebbia. Sleeper, John Brebbia.
That one would surprise me, but maybe. I'm still drafting Hicks as like a number two reliever, but
right. It's
you have to be aware it's not a sure thing.
So Hicks or Strickland?
I would rather take Hicks.
I definitely take Hicks in a shallower league.
I think if you're drafting Hicks as your number two reliever, and talking a categories league, you need to draft a third, somebody like Strickland, just to provide some insurance there. But yeah, in a shallower league, like a points league, a league where you know there will be some saves available on the waiver wire, I'd go for the upside of Hicks.
Okay, and then we think Matt Barnes is going to be the, at least open the year as the closer for the Red Sox. And that, I mean, that, he could end up being just an amazing steal. I still think they're going to trade for someone at some point, but yeah, we worry about that in July. Any other position battles? Please say no. I'd love to get the emails here.
Oh, there are a ton of position battles, Adam.
All right, well, anything really, really important?
That we haven't covered at all this podcast. Go ahead and get to the first email. I'll see if I find any on my column.
Okay, and I thought we were going to talk about Fab, but we can talk about that next week because, you know, you need the season to start. From Carlos, I have Kershaw and Polanco going on the DL to start the season. Brad Peacock is available. Should I drop Joe Musgrove, Nate Eovaldi, or John Gray to get Brad Peacock? Or wait for players to become DL eligible, IL eligible, you should have said, and then get Peacock, taking the risk of someone else picking him up. So you could either wait for the season to start to try to get Brad Peacock, or you could drop Musgrove, Eovaldi, or John Gray. And also, Paddock is a free agent.
Is this a league where the relief pitcher eligibility matters?
I do not know, but I would say that no matter what, I would be dropping Musgrove for Peacock. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, but then you throw Paddock into the mix. I'm not sure he doesn't serve priority over Peacock, unless like if it's a league where sparps matter, like it's a points league, Peacock.
But I'd go Peacock. No matter what.
I think I'd chase the upside of Paddock otherwise.
Oh, there's so much upside with Brad Peacock. And upside that we've actually seen in the majors as a starter.
I get it. I mean, all three of these guys deserve to be rostered. So, I have Joe Musgrove on my sleeper list, so that's not totally under
Would you drop? Would you drop, say, Nate Evaldi and Musgrove for Peacock and Paddock?
You know, in a shallow league like this, even though I know I rank Evaldi ahead, but it if these two guys are available, it must be a pretty shallow league. And I think in that case, I would sell out for the upside like that. I think I would drop both Musgrove and Evaldi for Paddock and Peacock.
Dan in Toronto's in a 12-team, 5-category, head-to-head auction league. You do have to start a middle infielder and corner infield. $260 budget. How much would you be willing to bid on Adalberto Mondesi?
I would be willing to bid... I passed on him for $28, right, in our 12-team... Roto League. So $25 I think is what I have him for. I'd be willing to go 26, maybe even 27, but 28 is where I drew the line.
From Nick, should I drop Jesus Luzardo for Josh James?
I would say no, but I don't. It's just a judgment call. Like, if you think James, there's a chance James is in the rotation sooner, but there's a chance he's not in the rotation at all.
This is an email from Scott. Dear Mark, Freddie, John, and Jose, as a huge fan of this team, I hope you get this reference. Mark, Freddie, John, and Jose. Oh, I got it, but I had to Google it. Got it? I believe, I want to say these are World Series champions. On the same pitching staff, Mark, Freddie, John, and Jose. Who the hell is Freddie? Oh, yeah.
Is it?
So I think Freddie? This is Mark Burley, Freddie Gonzalez, Freddie Garcia.
John Garland.
And Jose Contreras.
Okay.
I don't know if this was the World Series team, but those are White Sox guys. I have Tyler White on my bench. I went to pick up Trevor Richards and was going to drop White. Then it dawned on me, I have no idea how to value Tyler White this year. Could you speak about Tyler White's value? Categories League.
I think there's a lot of upside. Just looking at his minor league numbers, looking what he did. Primarily in August last year, it kind of tailed off at the end. But what makes it hard to assess his value is how committed the Astros are to him. That's hard to say. And DH is the spot he'd be filling with Evan Gattis gone. But at some point, they're going to want to find playing time for Kyle Tucker. I don't think they're totally just making a bench player out of Tony Kemp. They're going to move pieces around. And like in previous opportunities in the majors, kind of like last September, White has been very streaky. And it's possible he just slumps his way out of the rotation. That's what we're going to call it, like a basketball right. term rotation.
Right.
So he's a late round flyer. You know, I'm not as excited about him as like the Luke Voits and Pete Alonzos of the world, but there's a chance come mid June. We either view him as a must start option or he's just buried on the waiver wire with no hope of being claimed again.
A few more emails. This is from Jerry. I just finished my draft and I realized I'm low on projected home runs. Who are some guys outside the top 250 that could hit 30 home runs?
Outside the top 250.
Okay, I got ADP up here. Well, I don't think Domingo Santana's going to hit more than 30. Pete Alonso.
There's a chance, though. I mean, if we're just talking a chance. Yeah, definitely Pete Alonso.
Framil Reyes?
Yes, that's a position battle that I don't think we're going to get resolved, but back on the subject of position battles.
Randall Grichuk?
Sure.
Who else? Jake Lamb?
We're looking outside the top 250. Lamb could, yes. I'm the least enthusiastic about him of that group. But he could.
Jay Bruce?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, particularly if the Mariners have enough confidence in his health, you know, because he was... Plantar fasciitis dealing with that all last year. If the Mariners are confident enough with his health that he's their number three hitter, and he was a consistent source of 30 homers prior to last year.
Right. Jung Ho Kang, I think for sure could. Well,
yeah, there's a chance.
He'd be in the ballpark. And then honestly, I Greg Bird. Okay, next email. John from Philly. How do you fill out your bench in a points league?
In a points league, it's usually starting pitchers. That's the format where you're most taking advantage of two start weeks, and there's not as much available on the waiver wire ever as there is in like a roto league. So just in terms of cornering the breakouts, you want to fill your bench with starting pitchers there as well. I might take a high upside hitter or two, particularly if it's somebody really versatile or if it's somebody I think has a lot of upside. But for the most part, I want that to be starting pitchers.
Okay. Now, this is a 10-team points league, so I think that you might be able to find good pitchers on waivers. But in a 12-team points league, I mean, I'm totally with what Scott said. In a 10-team points league, maybe I might tilt a little more toward high upside hitters. But again, maybe I wouldn't overthink it in a 10-team points league because, truthfully, there are going to be plenty of players on waivers throughout the year. Just a couple more emails, Scott. We'll try to get done quickly here. Hugh from St. Louis. I need to improve on setting my lineup each week in a head-to-head points league. What do you take into consideration when you make your weekly lineup decisions?
I try not to change my lineup much at all. This is kind of a general rule across fantasy, particularly with a must-start. Like, a must-start hitter is a must-start hitter, and it doesn't matter what his matchups are. And usually that part of your lineup in a head-to-head format without the middle infield spot, the extra outfielders, normally that's going to be a must-start player. You might have, like, an outfielder you're debating. You might have, like, a utility spot. It's not somebody like a Nelson Cruz where you're just automatically starting him. You know, that's fine if you have a couple spots. But for the most part, I'm just leaving them. Starting pitcher is where you make the most adjustments, and a lot of it just has to do with who's making two starts. I don't automatically sit a one-start guy for a two-start guy. I think there's a must-start class in that format at starting pitcher, and it's basically, you know, the ace tier, the Trevor Bowers of the world, you know, that group. But something like you know, a two start. I'm trying to think of it, like a two
right,
start.
Like a one start, Yusei Kikuchi is like a top 40 pitcher, or a two start.
Joey Lucchesi,
who has the Giants and Diamondbacks at home.
Yeah. I'm for that comparison, I'm not even sure the matchups matter that much. But yeah, that's where you prioritize the two start guy over the one start guy. And obviously, if somebody like Kikuchi turns out to be a true frontline pitcher, you change your assessment.
Right.
But that's, you know, the range I'm thinking is like 25 and beyond at starting pitcher. They're all subject to being benched for an interesting two-start guy. Not a scrubby two-start guy, because, you know, there's a lot of damage that can be done if you do that. But somebody else who you think about rostering, regardless of the number of starts they're making, then yeah, they're worth swapping out.
This is Seth from York, Pennsylvania, our last email of the day. Dear Gordy, Chris, Teddy, and Vern. Come on, Verno.
Vern should be the giveaway, right?
Vern. Come on, Verno. This is
Verno.
Stand by me.
Oh, okay.
Terrific movie. So last year I grew increasingly frustrated with my catcher only playing about 4 games a week. So I dropped my catcher and I picked up Kurt Suzuki and Tyler Flowers, and this is obviously a daily league. And I had a starter every day, and their combined stats were very good. Do you like that strategy? Is there any team that you would do this with? We get this question somewhat frequently. It just seemed like because the Braves had 2 catchers that combined for good numbers, people thought this was a viable strategy, but that was like the only team, I'm pretty sure. So I hate this strategy.
Well, in a daily league, it makes more sense than like a 2-catcher league where you're committing both of those spots.
I just don't want to waste a roster spot on a freaking catcher. Like in a daily league, I'd rather have a better hitter that I could sub in for an outfielder or whatever a day off.
That makes sense. I mean, I do think there are some other tandems that could produce. I mean, look where Kurt Suzuki went. Washington, between him and Yan Gomes,
sure.
I think they'll put up
but
pretty good numbers.
Awful. He might not be. He's been awful for most of his career. Yeah, the other way, you roster two catchers, you play them every day, you're going to hurt your batting average, your OBP a lot. But
that's true.
Get it. I guess if you can pull it off, if you have the roster space, it's not the worst idea, but I don't like it.
Yeah, you'd have to have a pretty big roster. I think you're right about that. That's just not the wisest use of that roster. Wisest use of that roster space.
Right. Scott White, thank you very much. Thanks for going overtime today.
Do I still have time to finish this bracket? Because we're coming up on it,
Yeah, you got like 20 minutes.
All right.
You should be pretty much done. I took UNC over Duke. What are you going to do?
Well, so far I got Duke in the championship game. I'm still working on the other half of the bracket.
Okay. Good luck, Scott. Good luck to all of you out there. Talk to you tomorrow with a complete ADP review. See ya.